is Chilly Saturday, as you can see here in Chicago. I'm Pam McElbain, your host of The Inclusive Voice. I wanted to share this morning from the Pulse, for our Pulse on the News, really a statement that I personally made, in my opinion, on what's happening with immigration. So it's a statement from me on human dignity and immigrant safety. So today I'm speaking as the CEO of Promina, as being human being, because what we are witnessing in this country, in my opinion, is not normal, nor is it acceptable. A soul has shared a simple truth that has stayed with me when I was part of a meeting. What happens to you, it matters to me. As I listened to the many messages of the leaders of a national faith call to action, I heard that some truth again and again spoken over and over through grief, courage, and an insistence that human dignity is not negotiable. I'm a believer in inclusion and belonging, and I want to be clear. These are not just for the values. Inclusion and belonging are not just values for the workplace. They are values for the community. They are what we owe one another as neighbors and as human beings, regardless of where we are in the world. So across the United States, immigrants and their families are facing escalating cruelty, race, detention, fear in neighborhoods, and a level of force that is tearing at the fabric of our community. Immigrants represent every ethnicity and race. They are Black, and they're Brown, and they're Asian, they're Indigenous, they're white. They are our neighbors, our coworkers, our classmates, our loved ones. They are part of America. That's what makes America great, and they're part of all of it. So when violence spills over into the lives of American citizens, when people are harmed or killed in the course of immigration enforcement, we have crossed a line that should stop every one of us in our tracks. That should stop every one of us in our tracks. Today, we remember all of the lives lost. We hold close to families who are grieving. We refuse to accept a world where people become collateral damage. This week, the U.S. Senate is considering a major funding package that includes money for Department of Homeland Security and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, as it's known for. Funding decisions are moral decisions. No agency, in my opinion, should receive a blank check for harm. If our tax dollars expand attention, deepening fear and fuel violence, then our government is choosing cruelty over community, in my opinion. We also have to name what is true. Fear-driven enforcement doesn't make us safer. It makes people afraid to report crimes, afraid to seek medical care, afraid to send their kids to school. It fractures trust, and the cost of that fracture is measured in real lives. We are back to what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the fierce urgency of now. This is a moment that asks something of us all, not later, not when it's convenient, but now. A call to action, not coming from me, but coming from leaders of national action that we're going to speak to some today, is to write our Congress leaders today, our representatives from the Senate as well, and tell them what's important to you. Protect due process and human rights. Ask them to invest in community-based support and lawful human immigration systems, not intimidation and detention. You know, we can disagree on policy, but we cannot compromise on dignity. So thank you for listening, in my opinion, to On the Pulse. We'll be right back with our special guest today, Pablo Tapia and Reverend Michael Addy, who's the executive director of one of these major organizing communities of Gamilio Network. So stay with us. We'll be right back with you.
Welcome to P&L Group Holding Company, where purpose meets leadership. For more than two decades, we've been at the forefront of advancing inclusive leadership, cultural transformation, and workforce equity across industries. At our core, we believe that inclusion is more than a goal, it's a business imperative. That's why our mission is simple. We help companies align their people, culture, and strategy to drive measurable results and long-term impact. Our work is rooted in research, benchmarking, and a deep understanding of the dynamics shaping today's workforce. We offer executive coaching, talent development, data-driven strategy, and thought leadership platforms that support C-suite leaders, emerging professionals, and organizations ready to lead with intention. Through our flagship brands like Publishing and Multimedia, Diversity Business Review, the Inclusive Leadership Index, and DLS Learning Solutions, we've cultivated a global community that celebrates leadership, champions equity, and ignites real change. Whether you're transforming your organization from within, building your leadership muscle, or looking to measure what matters, we're your partner. P&L Group isn't just a consultancy. We're your ecosystem for inclusive excellence. Join us. Lead forward. Let's redefine what leadership looks like together.
Welcome back. This chilly morning. Go grab your coffee, as I say to you guys. Sit back and join us in this really, really important conversation we're going to have. Today we have joined with us Reverend Michael Addy, Executive Director of the Gamaliel Network. And you'll learn more about what this organization does, as well as Michael's committed work to this, his commitment to this work. So before we get started, I want to say good morning, Michael, and welcome.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And where are you calling in from, Michael?
I am calling in from chilly but sunny St. Louis.
Okay, you're down the street. Okay. So one of the things I like to ask my guest, Michael, every show is, you know, what do you do, particularly in the work that you're in, to keep yourself mentally and physically well?
That's a great question. I am very intentional about my time, and so I most definitely calendar time for me to sit quietly, do reflection. Sometimes, you know, part of my self-care routine is I need to just watch some stuff on TV that does not require me to think. So no news. I go weeks without looking at, you know, regular broadcast news. I turn all of those things off as part of my self-care routine. Most definitely finding time to read. And when it's not, you know, in the below zero temperatures, I most definitely like to get out and enjoy some nature. And there's a park down from my house that I sometimes go to and sit on the bench and just enjoy the sounds of nature.
Well, you know what, Reverend Addy, or Michael, whichever you prefer, I will say this to you.
Either one is fine.
Okay. I'm so glad that you also, you know, use the mindless part of television or the cable network to tune things out, because I do that sometimes too. Sometimes it's just good to have the mindless stuff there. So tell a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? And, you know, where did you go to school? And prior to getting into organizing, you know, what were some of your aspirations?
Yeah, so I live in St. Louis, so I call myself a St. Louisan now, but my family may have issues with that because I was born and reared in Kansas City, Missouri, which is on the other side of the state. But after university, I moved to St. Louis. I got my undergraduate degree from Central Missouri State University in Computer Information Systems. So I worked in IT for many, many years. I worked for Daimler Chrysler at the time here in St. Louis. Then I went and did a few years working for IBM, and then just really got burnt out on the whole corporate cycle. I was a project manager, building data centers for IBM across the country, supporting their clients, and realized that that work was really just kind of draining my joy. And so I was already a licensed and ordained minister and decided I needed something more, and went to seminary at Eden Theological Seminary here in Webster Groves, Missouri, right next to St. Louis. And after that, I got introduced. As I was in seminary, I met a friend who started with me and introduced me to community organizing work. and I did a small project around voter engagement, and that was it. I knew then that I could not go back or continue working in corporate America and doing information technology, so I switched over and became a part-time community organizer. And then that led to a full-time lead organizer and then eventually executive director of a Gamaliel affiliate in East St. Louis, UCM, United Congregations of Metro East. And then from there, worked to build that organization up and then went was tapped on the shoulder by Reverend Dr. Sarsky Wilson, who had just become the executive director of the Children's Defense Fund out of D.C., and went and did some work with them for a couple of years, and then came back to St. Louis to work at an organization called We Power that was doing work around early childhood education and community wealth building in the region. And then after that, then I applied for the position with Gamaliel as the executive director, national executive director position, and here I am.
Wow. Well, you know, I love the story because you went from, you know, doing your corporate discipline to mission-driven work. And for our audience, you know, so what is organizing? What is that work, in your words? What is community organizing?
I think, you know, yeah, so community organizing, the definition changes depending on what organizer you're talking to, because sometimes
I'm talking to you then. What does it mean to you?
Right, I know. Well, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's a good definition. So for me and Gamaliel, when we think of community organizers, a community organizer is the person who is oftentimes behind the scene working to train and develop leaders to engage in the public arena. We train and we work with congregations and faith communities and people in community to prepare them to have a voice and to build power. So one of the key things about being a community organizer is we build power to affect change in communities and change policies and get people the things that they need to be fully human and to have some access and control over what impacts their lives.
So anybody that has a desire to be empowered, to organize, can be trained? Or is it a certain type of person or leader that, do you have to be a leader already?
No, I think anybody with a desire can be a community organizer. Like, there's no... and I tell people this all the time, there is no university program or a group of classes that you can take that will give you some certification in community organizing. And so I think that's the wonderful thing about community organizing is that anyone can be a community organizer if it is truly what you want to do and is truly your calling. There's a difference between an activist, a leader, and a community organizer. Community organizer is very focused on certain principles, arts, and discipline of organizing, and that's what makes a difference. But there's no, one type of person that can be a community organizer. It really depends on if this is really your calling and if it's what you want to do and build power.
Okay, so you're taking us to school there a little bit. You know, I'm gonna have to call you Reverend Addie now because you're teaching now. So thank you for that definition of community organizers. And then you said there's a difference between an activist and a leader. So how do you define activists?
So usually an activist is the person that is out front, who's kind of leading a movement, or the person on the ground. So the activists usually come out when there's a rally or a march, and they advocate and move people to action. So they activate people. They're activists.
Okay, go ahead.
So in St. Louis, when I started community organizing, it was right around Mike Brown. when Mike Brown was tragically murdered in Ferguson. So there were a lot of folks that came into St. Louis, and there were a lot of folks here in St. Louis who were community activists. And so they got people activated. They organized food for the marchers. They organized the events and locations where we would go and get people active. Like, they organized those things. But they also were kind of the front people. So they were the people, some of them were the ones who were in front of the camera, who were so, speaking for the groups. Community organizers, you will hardly ever see me in front of a camera. Like, this interview is out of the ordinary for me, if that makes sense.
So thank you for that, Reverend Addy. So how about would you consider some names that people No. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was he the activist or leader?
He was a leader. He was a leader slash activist, but more so a leader. Yeah.
And so how about Reverend Jesse Jackson?
Most definitely a leader and an activist.
Okay. So all these leaders, even Cesar Chavez. Leader and activist. Okay. So I'm giving these really big names.
He was a leader and an activist. So when I think about, this is a good question, because when I think about the people who were behind the scenes, for Chavez, Dolores Huerta, right? Yes. Dolores Huerta was there organizing. Bayard Rustin was there with Martin Luther King, and her name is right on the tip of my tongue, Ella Baker.
Like, Ella Baker,
you don't
yes.
see very much. Yeah, Ella, like, they were the organizers. They were the folks behind the scenes. Like, you didn't see them getting up, giving the big speeches or being in front of the cameras. Mainly, they were the folks who were doing the work and pulling the strings and getting the things in order and moving, getting people in place to make things happen. That's the difference.
How about you? As a Anna Garcia Ashley, Reverend Michael Addy, Executive Director of Gamaleo Network, and other leaders, are you guys considered activists slash leaders, or are you considered activists?
Yeah, we're not activists slash leaders. We are activists slash organizers.
That's good. No, I'm loving this.
We're organizers.
Every organizer
is an activist also, but that's every activist is not an organizer.
Okay. Ooh,
so there are moments when we are out there in the middle of the thing that is happening, and we have to plan actions, but we are not the leaders. Now, you won't hear an organizer claim to be a leader, because leaders' roles are very different. But we can be activists and organizers.
So, in summary, before we go to commercial break, I know you guys are like, it's a play on words, but actually, it talks about the integration, if you will, of the leaders that are up front. They are up front, they're vocal, they're helping setting the stage externally to the world. Your activists, you may have some leaders that are also activists, so that means they're passionate about driving the change. But then you have the organizers who have their premise and core is to move on the ground to help drive change. So in hand, compliments, they are activists. So a little bit of everyone, and I have to say there's a little bit of leadership in all, because it takes courage and, great, I think, strength to be an organizer, to have that determination of an activist, and to lead those that are right there with you. So thank you so much for, so this kind of defining moment. So we all understand that, at the end of the day, there's a role for all of us, because at the end of the day is being empowered to drive change, taking your own voice to join with others that can drive some meaningful change. So with that, we're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back to talk a lot more and go into depth about the work that Reverend Michael Addy does and other colleagues in terms of what's happening today around immigration and the siege under ICE.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. there to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important, and we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
Welcome back. I'm Pam McElvain, your host. Here with me, Reverend Michael Addy, Executive Director of Gamil Network, Gamilia Network. So Reverend Addy, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, we've had Gamilia on our show in the past, but what the organization does, its mission, and then its stance on what's happening with the current issue around immigration.
Sure. Gamilia is an organizing network. So we're a network of affiliate organizations that do community organizing in their local community. And we are faith-based organizing. That is our focus. So we organize the organized. And for us, those are communities of faith. So our denominational mix is anywhere from Baptist, Catholic, UCC, Muslim, Jewish. So we're not an interfaith organization, but we work with multiple faiths in order to organize around issues around social justice and things that matter to the communities in which our affiliates are located in. So not only do we work on national issues that drive our work, but each affiliate has local issues that are very important to their state and to their city or community in which they are located. And that is the work that we do. So we have several national initiatives around transformational justice, which particularly targets transforming the criminal legal system into a system that really, really does justice for people who are engaged in that system, right? And then we also do civil rights for immigrants. So that table in particular is kind of at the forefront of some of the work that we're doing now just because of the particular circumstances that we find our country in. And then lastly, but not least, we also engage in environmental justice, which focuses in particularly on environmental racism and the complexity of issues that impact marginalized communities when it comes to environmental justice.
So thank you so much. Can I just ask you just for further clarity so that our listening audience can understand? So when you talk about affiliates are those, I mean, what makes an entity an affiliate?
Yeah, so we have affiliates in around 14 states. So affiliates are organizations that are part of our network. They have their own local boards. They have an executive director. They have lead organizers. They have general organizers, and they work directly with congregations in their particular community. And so, each one of our affiliates are their own 501c3s. So they're their own organization, and so we are a network by affiliation. So they've chosen to join and be a part of Gamilia, of our larger network, which makes up Gamilia.
Okay. And then they work with the faith-based organizations locally to help them be interconnected and achieve whatever the initiatives that they're focusing on and align it to a national network.
Exactly. So I used to run the affiliate in East St. Louis. Yeah.
Okay. That may. Yep. Just wanted folks to understand that terminology. So I appreciate, you know, in talking about, it's like the rise of certain initiatives. And today we wanted to really hone in a little bit on the work that the National Action Network, NANS Network that supported civil rights and immigrant justice, but also, you know, what Gamaliel and other action networks are doing around the nation to support this issue. First, let me say, you know, in your opinion or in the stance of the opinion of the national organizers coming together, what is, do you guys consider the major issue and what is before us around what's happening with immigration today?
I think it's difficult to pinpoint one major issue, because I think that there are a number of issues or concerns that have arisen from this regime's immigration policy, right?
Oh, so feel free to expound. I don't want you to just talk about one. If there's three or four, share with us this clarity, because you guys have the clarity on what you're focusing on. Not to say others don't, but this is one of the things that I want to accomplish today. Here's some very clear initiatives as it relates, you know, not just being personally angry, but what's really being violated, and what we have to focus to try to move in a more forward, humane direction. So yeah, go ahead and give us number one, two, three, and four if necessary.
Okay. Okay. So one is the dignity of human life that undocumented people and immigrants are not illegal. They are human beings. And therefore, because they are human beings, they are entitled to certain rights. And in our Constitution, in the preamble, inalienable rights that are granted by God, by every human being, right? So how we engage people, how we treat people needs to be humane. And we're seeing that a lot of inhumanity in the way that ICE engages these communities and people who are undocumented. The next part is these people engage children? Like, children are being harmed. I'll go back to the first Trump administration when they were putting children in these large cages as part of their immigration policy and family separation. They're not doing that we know of, right, publicly, but what they're doing, what they've been doing here lately by using children to lure out their parents. We do work around trauma-informed care. I cannot imagine the trauma of a child, that child that they use with the bunny rabbit hat, yeah, to go to the door to lure his mother out. And if she had come out, imagine the trauma of him, the role that he had to play, and then watching them arrest or assault his parent, right? So there's harm to families. There's harm to children who are our most vulnerable in society, our children and our elders. And then there is harm to the immigrant populations who are also very vulnerable in our communities, because one, they pay taxes. They don't get the benefit of paying those taxes. And I can give you numerous stories of how undocumented people have been taken advantage of, made to do work, and then told that they were not getting paid. And then what are you going to do about it? Because you are undocumented, right? So these folks have been vulnerable in our community, in our society, but they are the people who do the work that we will not do, that we don't want to do. Yeah. So
that's all of those things.
And all of those things for people of faith, because that is what Gamaliel does. We organize and we organize around faith and our values. I'm unapologetically Black and unapologetically Christian. That is my perspective. And where I go to in the scriptures is when God told the children of Israel, leave the edges of your field for the sojourner or the immigrant, for folks who may just be passing along who are hungry so that they can eat too. So for me, how we treat the sojourner, how we treat the stranger, very much so speaks to the work that we do in Gamaliel, and why we do the work that we do, and why at this point in time we are focusing on this immigration crisis that has been generated by ICE and this current regime.
Thank you so much, Reverend Addy, for that clarity on the initiatives. And to your point, there's so much around it. But I like the way you frame the dignity of human life. And then you actually let people know that it's inclusive of the entire family. And the I don't want to say it like this, but it is the misuse of children. So with what's going on in Minnesota, we have... we do have an affiliate there, and Pablo, the executive director, works closely with the immigrant communities. So what are some of the things that the affiliates on behalf of the immigrant communities do to try to support, you know, through the overall Gamaliel network, their role in trying to support these families? Can you give a couple examples?
So let me just preface this by saying that in Gamaliel, we have worked with, we have folks who are DACA recipients, who are organizers. We work with communities, all communities. And at the forefront of our work, in particular in this, when it comes to this immigration crisis that we are in, it's the safety and well-being of those folks in Minnesota. Because some of our affiliates have undocumented people who participate, who are advocating for their rights, right? And so I want to be extra careful that we do not put a target on them. Or, we have to be strategic in what we say and how we do and how we move, because we know what I'm saying. I'm just wanting to point out that that's part of our strategy, right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I really get that, because many people only see immigration as a federal issue, but from your perspective, you know, how are local policies, you know, and policing and partnerships with ICE, you know, you talked about, you know, could shape the daily lives of people right now. How could it not be such a deterrent and become, you know, where we're more, you know, realistic in dealing with immigration? But right now, it's because of the inhumane treatment that has risen at this level, or is this just something that's always been there and we didn't know it and it's now showing up? But pretty much I'm asking, you know, how are local policies being able to help us police and partner better with ICE so that we can, you know, have a future forward way of being, you know, handling this issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can say that there are policies. When I ran an affiliate in East St. Louis, there's a community that is largely Latino right next to East St. Louis. And one of the things that we worked on and partnered with our Latino organizations was around getting driver's licenses for undocumented people so that they would not run the risk of being held when they were stopped by police. Right. So getting driver's licenses that, you know, so there are policies, right, that can help these communities as they work towards getting their full citizenship. And I use that word loosely because we are all citizens of the world. And so I use it in that particular context. So but there are policies that we can put in place around finances and banking in East St. Louis and Fairmont City, which is right next door. There's a bank that we work with very closely that worked with the immigrant community in order to make sure that they had access to financial services, because many of these folks live outside of the traditional ways in which those of us who have quote-unquote citizenship can operate. And many of the problems are the same across poor communities. So there's policies that we've worked on that help improve people's lives and help make their lives easier so that they can feel like they are and be fully human. Mm-hmm. And not be on the edges, marginalized, right? So we look at all of those things in our affiliates.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful when you think about where we take advantage as a U.S. citizen in our just daily flow of what we do. And we're not even thinking, we don't even think about in this century, in this decade, in this millennial, that people are still living in a place of fear and lack of just basic safety and sustainability initiatives. So that's powerful to know that this is the work of these affiliates. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back after this commercial break. Stay tuned so we can hear a little bit more about, you know, what you can do as well in supporting what's happening when you see initiatives and policies that you don't agree with. Stay with us. We'll be right back with you after this break.
Life-changing is what drives us, all of us. At UPMC, we believe life-changing medicine can't wait, and that our breakthroughs are only as good as the people they help. Serving more than just patients and members, but whole communities, to change the future of health for everyone. Because only then can we call it life-changing medicine. UPMC.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Reverend Michael Addy, Executive Director of the D'Amelio Network, national organizing entity, penetrated in 14 states and a part of a very, very large action network in trying to bring social justice to all. So, Reverend Addy, I'm going to tell you, this has been such a learning platform for me. And just as we talk about what's happening on the ground. But when you think about, you know, how you have, you know, been a part of housing campaigns, criminal justice, environmental justice, how do you see immigration enforcement intersecting with these other, you know, justice issues so that people plainly can see that this too is a social justice issue?
Yeah, that's a good question, because oftentimes we don't see the interconnectedness of these issues, that issues that impact one community also impacts other communities. And if those communities, especially when we think about immigration and the civil rights of immigrants, they are already on the margins, and then they are pushed from the margins to the margins of the margins. Right. These other things amplify their marginality. So part of the work that I do in my study and in my theological work is marginality and understanding communities that have been marginalized and that are on the margins. Right. And then how should people of faith and communities respond to engaging marginalized groups and marginalized communities. And so what we see is in East St. Louis, we saw a predominantly African-American community which had issues, and I'm going to go back to this banking issue, issues with money lenders, money loans, no banks in the community, using those debit cards that charge these astronomical fees to get their cash, their paychecks. And then when we see in the immigrant community that they face the exact same issue, right? And it's even worse because they may not have the level of documentation that folks in the African American community have in order to make sure that they even have access to these terrible financial instruments that are plaguing these marginalized communities. So all of these things are integrated with the civil rights of immigrants, with social justice issues. They're all very interconnected.
It really, and I appreciate the further descriptions of the interconnection of even our own community. And it also sounds to me like there's this fundamental economic issue that, you know, we talk about those that are in poverty. It's like, you know, injustices seem to compound themselves, and those that do not have access to just basic, you know, survival facilities, it becomes about, you know, again, marginalized individuals that all of a sudden become communities, and how we support that. So I am fascinated that you're focusing on, you know, a new work around marginalized communities. So within the organizing community where you are, you know, you're part, Gamaliel's a part of, you're part of, what kind of messaging are you providing from your new research, you know, to the affiliates in terms of this is what's top of mind in a, I don't want to say level set, but that we're trying to, you're always trying to improve it all. So that's not a good word, but maybe I should just say that you're trying to mitigate, you know, what is it that you're trying to mitigate? And I know it's in different communities, and I don't know if there's a word, to be honest, Reverend Addie, that helps it, because in one community, it, like you said, you use economic access, banking. In another community, you know, it could be something different depending on what's going on. So what would you say the generic, you know, across all of the marginalized communities are the couple things that we need to try to mitigate? And I am not saying mitigize, I am saying mitigate, try to get rid of, that we need to try to eliminate.
That's a good question. And I don't know if I actually have a good answer, because one of the things about Gamaliel's network is that we train organizers to organize in any circumstance. And because the diversity of issues are different, we want to make sure, like I consider myself an organizer's organizer. You could put me in the desert and I would organize the sand against the wind because the wind is blowing too hard.
Okay.
Right?
So
we train organizers to go into communities and to hear. And I think that's the part that oftentimes we don't get, because we have people drop into communities because, oh, there's a crisis. Like, there's a lot of people that have gone to Minneapolis, right? And some of them are there because they are very, very well-meaning people. And they're going to do some good work while they're there. But it's the folks who are going to be there after all of that is done, after they have, the folks who have come have left. Those are the folks, those are the people that we want to work with and then listen to. So it's really part of our job is to listen, to hear what the community needs, because the person who is the expert on themselves is that person. And so what we do is come in and give them tools and work with them to make sure that the things that they need in their community that we can fight for and that we can win. I don't know if that answered your question, but I hope
you did.
Okay.
No, you did. You brought some clarity and you made me think of another question around, so how, I know you can't prevent the escalation of the things that happen the way they are in Minnesota, but how are you arming, you know, how the organizers are there? I mean, what are they doing to help the people protect themselves in, you know, the recourse that they may have? I know you can't stop ICE from coming to your house and doing it, but then when you're in crowds and trying to help support folks, you know, what are some of the strategies that you're just trying to help the ordinary people so that they can, you know, I guess, be safe?
Yeah. So what we're doing and what we just rolled out is a toolkit that we are sending out to our affiliates. We are telling them to share them with their organization, with their leaders, with anybody in the community, with some very clear steps of engagement for mutual aid, for actions, and also for ICE engagement. So just the other day, I was sitting in on a training here in St. Louis, with a group that is particularly focused on how do we need to engage ICE and knowing the law, knowing your rights. Like when ICE comes to your front door and says they have a warrant, it has to be a judicial warrant. That means it has to be signed by a judge. Otherwise, you do not have to let them in your place of business, nor do you have to let them search your car, nor do you have to let them in your house. Now, they have a warrant, but it's from DHS, right? That's not the same as a judicial warrant. So there's rights, right?
Yes.
And having we've got to create a new form of the Underground Railroad, which informs people of their rights and connects them with resources, right? We need to have attorneys on speed dial. So when we do have to engage ICE, we got an attorney. We need to know our rights. You have a right to remain silent. You don't have to engage, right?
There's things
that we need to be doing, right? And people don't realize that because our emotions run high immediately because the tension is so intense that we want to say something back versus knowing
that
I have a right to remain silent.
That's right. Yeah. So this is really good stuff. And I did have an opportunity to look at the toolkit, which is great. So if people wanted to, and I can't believe we're at the end of the call already, but if people wanted to learn more about Gamaliel and organizing, how to get involved within their communities, where would you recommend they go?
So shoot us an email or go to our website. And you can get the email to our national office there, but we put out a calendar on our website of events. We most definitely are focusing on civil rights of immigrants right now. As a matter of fact, we got a big training that's happening, a national training that's happening down in Tennessee in March that is now open for registration. And we're going to be targeting some of these big corporations that are also complicit with supporting ICE and their activities. So we're doing some things, and you can go to our website, gamaliel.org. That's G-A-M-A-L-I-E-L, gamaliel.org. And we got a calendar of our events. The toolkit will be out there. It will also be in English and Spanish. We're just finishing up our Spanish translation.
And it's a real easy, clean website. I love it. I love the redesign of it. And talking about where you can go, and which is really great in terms of, you know, what you can do, even if you're frustrated, right, about everything that's going on, how you can continue to learn more. I so much appreciated, you know, you coming on the show, sharing, teaching us some things, as well as sharing with us what's going on and what we can do with the immigration issue that's happening and with the frustration that people are experiencing in what's going on. The last thing I will say is, as I've been talking to clients of mine in corporate America, they actually are dealing with the spillover of what's happening in the community in their workplace. Because you have people that, remember, you know, at some level, they're not that far removed from knowing someone of immigration status or, you know, having someone in their family and not necessarily just, you know, Hispanic, but immigration of all kinds. What advice would you give the folks within the workplace that are feeling the pressures of what's happening to be able to manage fairly what people are feeling?
Yeah. Well, one thing for sure, especially if you're a private business owner, know your rights and have a plan if ICE shows up to your business. Have a plan and know your rights, because if you have undocumented people that are working for you, because we know that is a reality, folks have to live, right? You need to have a plan of action if ICE shows up to your business, and know your rights and know that they do not have a right to walk into your business without your permission. Second is connect people with organizations that are providing mutual aid and care. And most of all, make sure that you take care of yourself and that you pay attention to your surroundings. We got to keep our head, we used to say back in the day, you got to keep your head on a swivel, right? You got to watch, you got to be watchful of what's happening. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So you got to, you have to be watchful, right? Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that you're sharing, particularly at the small business level, because that's more more likely to happen for federal representatives to show up at the workplace, is to be informed and to be protected. And then the resources with mutual aid and care, that's something that I think definitely should be readily available. And that while corporate America in some of its own entity may be involved at one way or another to help with the folks in the workplace, being able to create, you know, conversations of understanding and what they can do to support each other in the community and the families that they may know of. So again, gamaliel.org is a place you can go with a ton of resources. That's gamaliel.org. And I want to thank you so much, Reverend Michael Addy, for your time and being here to share with us what's happening in these trying times, and for your courage and leadership, for being that person, that champion to do this work. So with
You're
that,
so welcome.
Thank you again for being here. And that's a wrap, you guys. Pam McElvain, your host of The Inclusive Voice, WCPT 820 AM. And we'll see you all next week.
Don't let the tight labor market get in the way of your company's success. Open your mind to new ideas and open your enterprise to new workforce solutions. With Bold Business, companies can leverage extensive global assets and a lengthy track record of success in reducing labor costs. Don't let borders get in the way of giving your company the best possible workforce. For remote positions, Bold Business can save clients up to 30 to 50% with skilled and experienced candidates from a global talent pool. Head to boldbusiness.com for more information.
Imagine being part of a network where your voice matters, your leadership is nurtured, and your growth is intentional. That's what our membership community offers. When you join us, you're not just gaining access, you're stepping into a movement. Our membership platform connects executive leaders, emerging talent, and inclusion champions who are committed to personal, professional, and organizational transformation. With your membership, you'll receive exclusive access to benchmarking insights, learning labs, virtual masterminds, curated networking, and mentoring circles.
We offer tiered access from professionals looking to advance their career through SEC. Your leadership is nurtured at scale. Your growth is intentional. You'll also get preferred rates to our national conference, regional receptions, and big talks. When you join us, you're not just gaining access, speaking and publishing opportunities to elevate your brand. Our membership platform connects executive leaders, what makes us different, emerging talent, and inclusion champions who are committed to personal, professional, and organizational transformation. It's a strategic investment in your legacy. You'll receive exclusive access to benchmarking insights, connect learning labs, your next masterminds with us, curated networking, join and mentoring circles. Move forward. We offer tiered access from professionals looking to advance their careers to executives ready to influence at scale. You'll also get preferred rates to our national conference, regional receptions, and VIT talks. Plus, speaking and publishing opportunities to elevate your brand and thought leadership. What makes us different? We don't just celebrate leaders, we build them. This isn't a subscription. It's a strategic investment in your legacy. So whether you're here to grow, connect, or lead, your next level starts with us. Join the community. Move forward. And make equity real together.